702. Weekend Breakfast with Gugs Mhlungu. Standing in for Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
Live.
Online.
Smartphones.
DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 20 minutes before 8 o'clock. You are still on Weekend Breakfast on 702 with me, Gugs Mhlungu. Time for us to get into our sustainable living conversation. And coming up this week is the second international conference of the African Marine Waste Network. And it's titled Towards Zero Plastics to the Seas of Africa. It's happening from the 23rd to the 27th. It's going to be bringing together thought leaders, decision makers, researchers, on how to develop concrete plans on how to deal with the issue of plastic pollution, specifically in Africa's oceans. They'll be putting their heads together to figure out how we deal with this issue of plastic waste that's contaminating our oceans, and also try to find a solution of how we get plastics out of the environment. And I'm keen to hear from you about how you think we can do that. Can we deal with the issue? And it is a huge issue of plastic waste in our oceans. How do you reduce plastic in your own life? Do you think our previous interventions have made a difference? Years ago, I think it must be over 20 years now, we did away with free plastic bags. If you were born after that, you've only ever known plastic bags being a thing you pay for. But we did away with them, and the rationale was that it would help deal with the issue of plastic pollution, but also create much needed revenue. And we've seen other countries take a harsher approach to the issue of plastics. For instance, if you go to Kenya, Kenya has one of the hardest or harshest bans on plastics in the world. Likewise, Rwanda. And so I wonder if you think we should follow that route, what Kenya has done, what Rwanda has done, if you think it is possible for us to achieve zero plastic, and how do we do it? Let me know your thoughts on 011-883-0702. Your SMSs on 31702 and your WhatsApp messages on 072-702-1702. We're joined on the line by the International Conference on the African Marine Waste Networks, one of their conference keynote speakers, as well as a principal scientist at the CSIR, which is the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. We're joined on the line by Professor Linda Godfrey. Professor Godfrey, good morning. Welcome to breakfast.
Good morning, Gugu, and thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for your time. So the conference is looking at, or the ideas that will be discussed is how we move towards zero plastics in our seas. Just how bad is the issue of plastic pollution in the African continent?
It is bad. I think, you know, you just have to drive around our cities, our towns, you know, the awful floods that we had recently in KZN, and we saw just the amount of plastic that was washing down the rivers, down into the ocean, and then washing up on our beaches again. And this is, you know, this is occurring across Africa. You travel to Ghana or Nigeria or Kenya, you see this plastic issue that's plaguing the continent. But, you know, I think to some degree, we're certainly not anywhere near yet what you're seeing, for example, in Southeast Asia and Asia. And I think that's a signal for us in terms of where we're heading if we don't do something about our plastic problem now. Mm-hmm. You know, plastic is just it's the poster child of an underlying waste problem. It's very visible. You know, we see it through windblown litter or it floats, and that's why we're seeing it in water. But really, the problem is that we're facing a waste problem in Africa.
And when we say a waste problem, what do we mean?
Well, the reality is that we've got severe challenges around waste collection. Mm-hmm. Only around half of the waste that is generated in Africa is actually collected. And as a result, many communities then have to rely on just dumping it into an open field or disposing it into a river. And that then obviously, you know, leaks into the environment. More than 90% of the waste that we're generating in Africa just finds its way to uncontrolled or controlled dump sites. So we don't have proper engineered landfill sites. Less than 4% of waste in Africa is actually recycled. And yet there's so much opportunity around sort of creating a circular economy.
Mm.
We know that we can create more jobs through recycling than simply dumping it into a landfill site. So these are the things that we really need to address. How do we improve waste collection? How do we ensure that every African has access to a reliable waste collection service? We're responsibly disposing it. And then those waste streams that have, you know, that have value and are a resource, how do we recycle them to make sure we're keeping this waste out of our environment and especially out of our marine environment?
5 years ago, Kenya adopted what is often considered the harshest or the most serious ban on plastics, including banning the manufacture and the use of single-use plastic bags in the country. They banned the use of single-use plastics in certain protected areas. And as far as I understand, you can't travel to Kenya with plastic bags. Has that made a difference? I think Rwanda is another country that's followed a similar path. Have those kinds of bans, including on the manufacturing of single-use plastics, have they made a difference? Is there something we can learn from Kenya?
It's tricky to know for sure. And I think this is one of the key issues, you know, that the conference is wanting to address, is that we need to have an evidence-based approach to our plastic intervention. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hearsay, you know, from people in Kenya and Rwanda who have said, yes, absolutely, it's made a huge difference. You know, the plastic bags are not as visible anymore. And yet there are other people who say, at the same time, there's been a lot of illegal smuggling of these single-use plastic products into the country. Mm-hmm. And now, theoretically, because they're banned, there's no end-of-life solution to deal with them. So Africa has very much taken this approach around banning some single-use products. Again, most of the time it's been focused on your shopping bags, your carrier bags. But that's, again, just one of the dual-use plastic waste streams we're seeing leaking. You know, plastic bottles, straws, the earbud stems, the sucker, the little plastic sucker stems. There's so many different plastic products that are leaking into the environment. And certainly, you know, again, a lot of the thinking and what we're seeing emerging in the international discussion is to say there's no single sort of silver bullet to solve the plastic waste problem and the leakage of plastic into the environment. We can't just ban our way out of this. And similarly, we can't recycle our way out of this. It's going to require upstream interventions. So yes, there's certain products that it just doesn't make sense to have on the market in plastic. There's certain products that, in fact, maybe should be in something else. Maybe it should be in glass or maybe in paper or some other material type. And yes, absolutely the downstream, we need to improve waste collection and we need to improve recycling. So we need a combination of these different activities if we're truly going to solve the plastic waste problem.
And how much of it, I know you were just saying that there needs to be upstream interventions, downstream interventions. How much of that involves, for instance, individuals and households? Because often there is this conversation about, especially when we speak about climate change or challenges around, environmental loss, biodiversity loss, that individual actions perhaps aren't as significant as, for instance, if big companies, which are often the big polluters, don't make a difference. Is that the case with plastics? Is my, for instance, I don't use plastic bags anymore. Where possible, I don't want my produce wrapped in plastic because, you know, your fruits and vegetables are already often have a skin around them. Is that making a difference if we're making individual choices of not taking a straw or not, you know, taking your own coffee cup? Is that making a dent? Does it make a difference? Or does it need more of us to do that kind of thing to make a difference?
It's a really great question, that. And I think, you know, collectively, yes, it all does add up. I think to some degree, you know, we're also, as with climate change, you know, we're facing very big sort of systemic issues. And I think certainly, you know, with the oil industry, for example, there's perhaps been declining demand for oil when it comes to transportation as people shift to renewable, you know, electric vehicles and public transport and things like that. And so they're looking for other offtake markets. The petrochemical industry and plastics, you know, is a market that that product can be going into. So we've seen sort of a lot of interest and a lot of demand of sort of increasing plastic production. And there's a lot of stuff made out of plastic that just doesn't need to be made. Mm-hmm. At the same time, plastic does play an incredibly important role in making sure that we have access to safe food, to safe water, medicines, healthcare, etc. So it does play an important role in our lives. But I think we need to look critically at what we're making out of plastic and do we need to truly make it. At the same time, yes, we as consumers have a very important role to play. And I think that's, again, why it's so important to just bring so many stakeholders together in this discussion. We need government and the policymakers. We need big business. We need the retailers. You know, we've seen some of our retailers in South Africa making changes around plastic and plastic behavior. And then we as consumers, your civil society organizations, your NGOs, that are doing a lot to raise awareness around how to manage products at end of life. Don't just dump it in the field. Don't litter. Make sure you're disposing it correctly. Think about what you're buying. Do you need to buy it in plastic? You know, why are we kind of so lazy in terms of it's just so easy to get that plastic bag at the checkout and not to remember to take our reusable bag with us. Mm. So, yeah, consumers have a big role to play as well.
I know we were just saying when we were chatting about Kenya and Rwanda that, you know, perhaps an outright ban or a harsh ban is not necessarily, it won't be the silver bullet, and that we need different kinds of interventions to deal with the issue. But there is this discussion around this a legally binding global treaty on plastic waste that's being discussed. And I think there's also been a resolution at the UN's Environmental Assembly about it. Would that be helpful, or would that also be an attempt, I guess, of, you know, banning plastic, but now at a global level? Do you think that the treaty would be useful?
Well, I think, yes, this is, you know, this is a sort of an important discussion that's happening at the moment now in terms of what is this treaty going to look like and what are countries going to be committing to. And I think there's also an understanding that, again, there's not that just that one silver bullet, that one single approach. And so, you know, what collectively at a global scale should we actually be looking at to make sure that we address plastic? And my sense, you know, it's probably premature, but my sense again is that there's an understanding that we need both these upstream and downstream interventions. The important thing, you know, with the global treaty is that I always say waste flows from countries with strict legislation to countries with weak legislation. And we're seeing a lot of waste being dumped into Africa from the north, for example, supposedly under the disguise of, you know, we're creating jobs, we're growing recycling. And those are issues that need to be addressed. Africa can't become the dumping ground for other people's waste streams. And we're seeing this not only for plastic waste, but we're seeing it for electronic waste, for example, for end-of-life vehicles, for waste tires that are being dumped into Africa. And so the global treaty really addresses this issue around the transboundary movement of waste, but also making sure that we have consistent policy approaches. So there is an advanced policy instrument called Extended Producer Responsibility, EPR, which essentially makes producers of products legally and financially responsible for their product of life. We've seen EPR just recently, mandatory EPR implemented in South Africa, paper and packaging, electronic waste, lighting. So producers of these products now have a legal responsibility to manage products and end of life. And so these kinds of policy instruments like EPR, I think, will probably be part of sort of that toolbox that we're seeing under the global treaty as well.
Mm. Professor, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's Professor Linda Gray, CSIR Principal Scientist, joining us for Sustainable Living.